Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
This is episode 32 of the MV Red Podcast. I'm Michael. I am without my amazing co-host, the legend Dane Davis, this evening. But we are thrilled to be joined by our first, we've promised this for quite some time, our first liberal guest on the program, Zach, who is a junior at Ohio State. He's a Youngstown native, and we're thrilled to have you on tonight, Zach, to talk about redistricting in the state of Ohio that's currently taking place down in Columbus, as well as the changing political landscape that we're seeing over, especially like the last 5 years here in the Mahoning Valley. So before we get too much into that, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of your interest in politics and how that all came about?
So my name is Zach. I'm a junior at Ohio State. Grew up in Boardman, went to Cardinal Mooney High School. I am a economics major with a minor in public policy currently. And yeah, I've always been interested in politics, especially redistricting. I'm by no means like a huge expert in it, but I do follow it quite a lot, and I've made some of my own maps over the years. So,
yeah, I'm the exact same way, and it's kind of nice, you know. When you think of maps, you think obviously the first thing that comes to mind is like a road atlas, things like that. But maps really do tell the story about things, especially when it comes to politics, and it's really fascinating to see a map on election night fill in with counties, certain colors, red, blue, Republican, Democrat, how they fill in, especially in a competitive race, and kind of see how things change. So at some point this evening, we'll get into that. So let's talk redistricting. In the state of Ohio, there was a ballot initiative, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, that the thought process behind it is we would have a more bipartisan approach to drawing the legislative maps at the state level and the congressional level in the state of Ohio. However, the way the legislation worked, which I did vote for, I was in favor of it, it left open this door that we would still go down this road of a more partisan type map, because it eliminated the need for necessarily a 10-year map, because it bypasses the whole commission going through it, and it could go to the legislature and we could pass a 4-year map. So kind of based on what you've seen, we'll talk through the House GOP, House Senate, or the GOP Senate, and then the Democrat map. Kind of what are your thoughts to redistricting? How do you believe the best approach should be to get it done? Because it's really not an easy approach. After going through this last night, and I'll talk about that a little later, it's not as easy as one might think.
Yeah, there's kind of many different approaches, I'd say, with fair redistricting. I think some people favor like compactness of districts to keep different communities of interest together. And some other people think it should be like proportional. So what that would mean is currently the maps that are proposed have about 2 Republican districts in Ohio, or I mean 2 Democrat districts in Ohio, which does not match up with the fact that the state still votes about 45% for Democrats. So the way I would see it, I just think that we need it to be a bit more proportional. I think that there's a lot of gerrymandering going on here in Ohio and in other states. If you look at Illinois, for example, the Democrats have essentially done the same thing. So I guess what I would tell people is gerrymandering really does hurt people of both parties. And if we don't fix it, we're just going to keep going down this endless cycle of gerrymandering each other into oblivion.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I think it's easy on the surface to say, let's have a bipartisan approach. But when it gets down to it, when these parties, both sides get in power, they want to seize on their power and they want to preserve mm-hmm. their power. And that's what you essentially see it across the board. You mentioned Illinois. I know at least us on the right, there was a certain district, the way it was drawn, really just made you like head scratch. But then I'm sure you could find similar examples in states with Republicans mm-hmm. in charge as well. So one thing I noticed when I kind of went through the practice of attempting to draw a congressional map, I kind of used, I guess for me, three approaches or three items that I thought a fan of how the Mahoning Valley as a whole on in all three maps that have been presented. And I say that as somebody who would like to see a representative in Congress representing our entire Mahoning Valley, because we should have a lot of shared interests. We see it now. And so when I look at drawing a map, I think that to me is number one, is make sure a district is drawn in a way that makes sense for especially economic purposes. What makes sense? Does it make sense to slice the city of Youngstown from the city of Warren? Probably not. It's, you know, that's how we've kind of seen some of the maps. It doesn't make sense. So that's one. Secondly, try to preserve counties, you know, especially I would say, you know, when you're going through the process of drawing a map, it's easy with those rural counties to keep them together. But when it gets to those more urban counties, it's difficult, and you don't really want to see five or six districts take out Franklin County down in Columbus. Mm-hmm. That makes it quite difficult as well. And so I'm trying to think of the third thing here that I wanted to do. Oh, and the third thing I thought was important was preserving cities. It doesn't make sense to, you know, kind of use the example of Youngstown and Warren to split, let's say, a city in half. And for the most part, you could keep cities intact in the state of Ohio, with the exception of, I would say, Cleveland, Cincinnati, and especially Columbus, because when you, with all of the annexation that's occurred down there in your neck of the woods down there in Columbus, it makes it impossible. So the threshold, according to a great map, a website called Dave's Redistricting, was about, I think it was to the tune of 786,000 people roughly per district. So in the case of Columbus, when you set Franklin County or the city of Columbus, it's like 1.2, 1.3 million people. So you got to split it up. So mm-hmm. I mention this because as I drew my map, and when you see the end result, which we'll get into momentarily, it still came out quite Republican.
Yeah.
And it's because of my way of drawing the map, which wasn't in, I certainly was not intending, other than way of drawing the Mahoning Valley. I did not intend on gerrymandering. I had a
similar experience when I drew a map where it just came out like ever so slightly favoring the Democrats, to the point where I think they had the majority of the seats somehow. So it's like, yeah, I needed to redo that.
I could believe it. So let's first talk, and I'm going to show here on the screen. And for those recording or listening to the recording, I'm going over the Ohio House proposal. And this is one of the ones that I'm not a fan of, at least when it comes to the Mahoning Valley. I want to say that. So give me a second here and we will get this up. Okay, here we go. All right, so this is the Ohio House Republican drawing of the state of Ohio. So on the surface, what are some things, as somebody from your perspective, a left-leaning individual, what on this map is a concern for you when it comes to kind of keeping a fair, I would say more fair playing field for politics in the state of Ohio for congressional representation?
There would be two main problems I have with this map. The first would be Hamilton County down by Cincinnati. You have this weird district that covers about 2/3 of Hamilton County and then just goes up on this tiny little strip and covers this rather rural and very red suburban Warren County, which, I mean, it seems, you know, you can make a district that's pretty much exclusively Hamilton County. So I just think that's pretty clearly a gerrymander. The second main issue I have with this is what they did with the Akron area, and also just suburban Cleveland in general. They split it about 3-4 different ways to essentially drown out any type of blue vote in. Yeah, as you can see in Summit County there, it's split 3 ways, which, I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's ridiculous to split any county, let alone like one city, 3 ways. It just doesn't make sense. And it's pretty clear what the goal is there. And I think what's interesting is you can actually make a fair map that still leans GOP by a couple percentage points. And I don't know, I would just rather see that. And that gives a little more competitiveness, perhaps a little more fairness to have like in the midterms, if, you know, to show where the voters stand. I just find that this map, it kind of just keeps all the Republican districts safe and all the, and just packs Democrats into only 2 districts, which is, I mean, pretty ridiculous for a state that still votes about 45% Democrat.
So let me ask you this, because one of the difficulties I had when drawing my map mm-hmm. was the fact that, and I guess this is probably the case in many states across the country, that Democrats are more highly concentrated in urban areas. So like from my perspective, again, if I'm trying to keep a city intact, well, by default, I'm going to likely keep a large chunk of, we'll say, Democrats, more likely Democrat voters in a district because I'm trying to keep a city intact. So, field, because I look at this map and you could kind of see, you mentioned Summit County, Akron, you know, in 3 different districts down in Cincinnati. I see what you're talking about there with the funky Warren County and the little sliver with that in Cincinnati. From my perspective, it's not the easiest thing to do because Democrats are more highly concentrated within certain urban areas.
I think it's not that difficult to do, but that would require giving it a bit of a Democratic lean. Like that would require essentially making a very Summit County centric district, which no matter what other counties you add to that, it's going to usually at least give it a slight Democrat lean. But I mean, I don't think that's always the case. I mean, I find that oftentimes you can, like with Columbus, for example, you can make one central Columbus district and then have suburban districts like that kind of go either way. I mean, you can even make a pretty exclusively suburban district up in Cleveland that still votes Republican as long as you know the right suburbs to add to it. So I don't find it that difficult and especially like up with Toledo, what they did on this map, I also think that's a bit ridiculous. And
fair. So let me ask you this, because from my perspective, my greatest concern is the first thing, and I'm being completely honest with people here, is the first thing I look at is how is my area represented before I even look at like the partisan breakdown. Mm-hmm. And listen, I fully envision whatever district that I'm going to be in because of the changing landscape that we'll talk about momentarily in our area, that I'm likely going to be represented by a Republican. I feel that way. I feel pretty confident that that's going 100%. To happen. And I think that's one of the reasons why Tim Ryan is running for Senate, because I think he sees maybe the writing on the wall. This might, again, my perspective. But when I look at this district, what does Youngstown, Ohio have to do down there with like Portsmouth, Ohio, down at the southernmost point of Ohio? It's literally pretty much just a complete border district with West Virginia. And what does – you can make an argument, I would say, especially maybe southern Columbiana and then down the river because of the economic – engine that, which is the Ohio River, I could see you making an argument there. And that would be, again, similar to that of the current 6th district with which Bill Johnson represents. But when I see this district, what does Youngstown have in common with Portsmouth? You know what I mean? And then the other thing is, in that district, and again, I'm a Republican, so I have no issues with Bill Johnson, but I'd much rather have a congressman or a congresswoman from the Mahoning Valley representing the Mahoning Valley, because they will have the best interest. How is it that, let's say, I'm not sure where Bill Johnson lives. For some reason, I feel like he lives in
Marietta.
Marietta. Okay, yeah. That's what I thought. And so, again, he's represented Canfield and half of Mahoning County thus far, the Mahoning Valley moving forward. So if there's an issue that I have with this map, it is how that has been drawn. But again, I see your points, Columbus, and I'll show my map in a few minutes here. Mm-hmm. It was extreme of all the spots that gave me headaches. It was drawing a district of Columbus because you could draw it many ways, but because again, the population's 1.2 million in the city itself, you have to split part of the city up in at least a second district. But even then it was difficult for me, and maybe you have a third district. So that makes it a little difficult. So that is, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, with the Mahoning Valley, it's kind of interesting because when you redistrict it, the way the population works out between the two districts you're making, it's kind of just gets sandwiched between Northeast Ohio and Appalachia. And it's kind of difficult to not split it up pretty much no matter what you do. And I mean, I've figured out how to do it, but the way I did it personally would be just including most of Mahoning County, Trumbull, Geauga, Ashtabula, and Lake County into one. Making a Mahoning Valley centric district with all the population loss is increasingly difficult, especially since we're losing a congressional seat. So whatever district pops up has to take in even more population. And yeah, like you said, also, I mean, the only reason Tim Ryan's running for Senate is because he knows he's screwed. I mean, unless the area has gotten so Republican that unless they did a specific Democrat gerrymander, there's absolutely no way this area would vote for a Democrat in this current political climate.
I agree with you there. So next up on the screen, I'm showing the Ohio House or Ohio Senate Republican draft congressional map. Now, this one is a little different in terms of the Mahoning Valley representation. And I tend to like it a little bit more because it does keep Trumbull, Mahoning, and Columbiana intact. And it does go halfway down to the river, but it does include Marietta. So this would continue to be a district that likely would be represented by Bill Johnson. But look down there in the heart of Columbus, Central Ohio, Franklin County, again, pieced together in the three districts. You see the same with Cincinnati, kind of broken up in the two. Cleveland, that's another difficult area up there to draw the map. So what are your thoughts on this map from the Senate Republicans?
So I have no idea who created this map or what on earth they were thinking. My theory is it was a secret Democrat operative, because if you put this in and look at the presidential numbers, every district but two voted for a Republican, but like this, like it splits Columbus in three ways. It has Jim Jordan's district taking in like Worthington and Clintonville and OSU, and all these trending left suburbs. So I'm like, it just doesn't really make sense to me. And then up around Cleveland, they do a very ineffective job at gerrymandering it for Republicans, because when I look at it, I'm like, in the right year, Democrats could flip like two of these districts up in Cleveland. And what's also interesting is that District 15 down there, which is now Mike Carey's district. If you put in the 2018 governor results, Richard Cordray actually won that district. So again, this is a really risky map for Republicans. I don't quite understand what on earth they were thinking. That's kind of my take on it.
No, you bring up an excellent point with the 15th, because although most of southeastern Ohio is Republican, you do have Athens County where Ohio University is, and that always votes Democratic. And then you also have the eastern side of Columbus and all the way down towards Burns, which is where in the kind of the region where Portsmouth is that I had mentioned earlier. And then you also talked about the Cleveland area here. And I'm looking specifically at the 14th, which has all of Ashbyula, Lake, and Geauga, but which, again, on the surface looks okay for the Republicans. But then you include a portion of Portage. And judging by what I'm seeing here, it looks included in that. So you have Kent, you would have probably maybe even Hudson and the northern suburbs, or if you want to call it that, between Cleveland and Akron, especially Hudson, which definitely trended to the left this past election. And then some of those southern ones just south of the city of Cleveland. So that makes that to be a precarious district for Republicans in depending on the year and depending on who that representative is.
I would say that, I mean, from a standpoint of like keeping maps that are somewhat competitive, but in reality, you know, the Republicans still are going to want them to lean Republican in this state. I actually don't hate what they did with the Cleveland area. I mean, District 13, for example, would be a pretty decent, compact, competitive district. It's trending red, but, you know, there's enough competitiveness. And I also think it just, it keeps communities together more than the first map you showed. It doesn't just tear them up a million different ways. And with the 14th district, even, I mean, that does a pretty good job at keeping the different Cleveland suburbs along the lake together and some of the southern suburbs together. So I think this one just preserves the communities of interest more, except for down around Columbus, because again, it's just, they need to just accept that Columbus is really blue at this point. This is like trying to keep it red and it just doesn't really work out well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt about it that Columbus is definitely trending that way. And I think fast or go back in time about 10 years, if Democrats saw Columbus trending the way it was, they would probably be pretty giddy about the situation in Ohio. But who saw the polarization of so many of the red rural counties and then the changing demographics of the Mahoning Valley and this part of the state and even up towards Lorain and Ashtabula County as well. So the last map I want to show is going to be the House and Senate Democrat map. I believe it's a joint map in this case between the Democrat representation in Columbus here. Resolution may not be nearly as good on this one, but so I remember when this came out and it was fascinating to me. And this is to me like the Democrats waving the white flag with the Mahoning Valley because they essentially drew, although they split it in two, when I see this map, to me, it looks like a map that the Republicans would represent the entire Mahoning Valley based on the way the 11th district and the 8th district were drawn. Do you agree with me on that?
Yes, I find what they did with the Mahoning Valley to be pretty insane. Again, I don't know who's drawing the maps for the Democrats, but I would just say go on to election Twitter for 5 minutes and you'll find a better map that accomplishes the same thing. What's interesting what they did with, I have no idea what their thought process was. So they made the District 11, which is the one that goes up towards Lake County, that would be kind of remotely competitive. But what they did was they included Youngstown and then they had to go down into Poland and New Middletown instead of like, yeah. And I'm like, wouldn't you want to add like Struthers or Boardman or Austintown or somewhere that has like, you know, is competitive, but for some reason they just gave that. Yeah. I don't know why they thought New Middletown had to be in this like Cleveland suburban district, but that's what they did. And yeah, I mean, I have a map I drew that was very similar to this, but just way prettier to look at. So I mean, I don't know. I just think that this map's a bit, it's okay.
That is fair. Now, before we continue talking about this, we do have my infamous co-host has been able to join the episode. So I'm going to be adding him, Zach. Zach,
nice here to meet is Dane. You, Dane.
Hey,
Dane, how are you doing?
Hey guys, what did I miss? What's going on?
Well, we just spent the last better part of a half hour going through the House Republican in the House, the Senate Republican map. And now we're talking right now about the Democrat proposal in the state of Ohio. And I've kind of just complained a little bit about how the Mahoning Valley was drawn based on all three maps. Well, actually, I'm not even a fan of this one in terms of the Mahoning Valley. But so this is kind of where we're at, and talking a little bit about gerrymandering and things like that, Dane. Dane, do you have a hot take on the Democrat map?
Which map am I looking at right now?
So this is the Democrat proposal.
I mean, they're all like squiggly lines, right? Like this is the big – here, let me give you the big brain take on gerrymandering, right? It's like people will look at a map and they'll be like, look, the lines are so squiggly. It doesn't make any sense. This is gerrymandered. But like, look, this is gerrymandered too. The lines are super squiggly. Like why is the 13th wrapping around, right? Like I don't know. Why is Geauga with – the Cuyahoga suburb. I don't want to be with the Cuyahoga suburb.
Yeah, Zach. Dane is up in Geauga County. Just so you know.
Yeah. Hi, Zach. Nice to meet you.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Yeah. Is there any way I could send you a picture of the map that I made? Because I just think it's funny it's basically the same exact map, but just like less squiggly and ugly. It's like I have no idea why they made it that terrible.
Especially, I just don't understand what they're trying to do with the Mahoning Valley, especially because they drew two Republican seats. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why even?
Well, it's kind of hard for the Mahoning Valley is so Republican at this point that it would just be really difficult for them to even make it blue. Like, I just don't think they even thought it was worth it. And then also Tim Ryan is running for Senate because he knows that. So, I mean, they kind of just accepted the loss there, I would argue. But what I wanted to say about this map versus the others, I mean, this is definitely more proportional to the way the state votes, because this has, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This would have about 7 Democratic districts, which would come out to like 46% of the votes. It would be 46%. We'll get there. My point is, having only 2 Democrat seats, which the Republican maps are, that gives Democrats only 13% of representation in Congress in a state that they want about 45% of the vote in. So it just doesn't make sense to me. Now, do I think 7 Democrat seats is realistic? No, I actually don't. I would say 4, give me 3 and 1 competitive one in this political climate. But I do think it's the same thing the Democrats did in Illinois, where they only gave 2 or 3 seats to the Republicans when they get like 40% of the vote there. So to me, it's the same thing. It doesn't really make sense. It's clear that there's some type of trickery going on with that.
So on the screen now, I put one of your tweets up of the map that you did. It went viral. Look at this guy.
He's got
13 retweets, 95 likes.
I would like to add, this isn't that fair. I put fairy districting. I think it does lean a little bit too much to the Democrats. So
That's understandable.
I would revise it a little bit now.
I see kind of how, again, on the surface, the way, especially the changing demographics of Franklin County and Delaware County to the north, I'm not surprised with the way you drew the Columbus Metro. Cincinnati, again, that used to be a pretty Republican area, and the suburbs still are, which, you know, might contradict the idea of the suburbs trending away from the Republicans, and maybe they did to an extent, but down there, those counties that surround Hamilton County are very Republican. So unless you kind of divvy up Cincinnati, that, again, is understandable. But it looks as though, from my perspective, the district around Dayton, the district around Toledo, and maybe even the one around Akron look somewhat, not ultra blue, but maybe somewhat competitive.
They pretty much – I mean, I was trying to draw it on purpose to make competitive districts. As I said, I did – unintentionally, of course, let my biases show here, where 3 of the 4 competitive districts lean Democrat. But yeah, I would tweak this a bit. I think the second district, which is up by Toledo, is a pretty decent district. That keeps together those like working class towns up that way that kind of align with Toledo. I also think maybe the Dayton one was getting a little ambitious, adding Springfield into that. I don't know. I don't really have any other comments. Oh, and I would say with the third district up around the Mahoning Valley, I was able to keep all the Mahoning Valley together except for, I believe, Canfield.
Poor Canfield.
Yeah. Who needs them?
What?
We have a young guest here on the podcast. Yeah,
it's a podcast. Yeah, say hi.
Hi.
Look at this. We have a young, it's a young Republican day.
I think so. Say hi.
Hi.
And Dane, I don't know if you heard at the start, but you didn't hear. Zach here is a product of Cardinal Mooney, so we have three Catholic schools.
Oh, no wonder. No wonder. Yeah, that makes sense.
He actually lives about 2 minutes. His house is probably like 2 minutes down the road from where I live, too.
So, Zach, I have a question. I'm going to derail this, and then I got to go. So,
all right.
Okay.
Ask what you want.
I'm obnoxious, so, you know, I apologize. But you're a lib, right, Zach?
I guess you could call me that. I wouldn't call myself a Democrat. I would say just a left-leaning person. I don't know.
Okay.
Leftist center.
That's fair. What's going on with the Dems? What's going on? So I read an article today. Okay. I don't get this about the Democrats. You got to help me. I'm dumb.
Gun-toting,
Bible-believing, dumb redneck. Okay. And I don't know anything. And I just need to be governed by some smart Democrat. So I read today inflation, right, is up like 6%. And workers' wages, when you control for inflation, are down year on year. So when I talk to people on the left wing, they're all like, we have this horrible income inequality. It's really, really bad, right? And we've got these wealth gaps. And I'm sympathetic to that. And then 1 year under Papa Joe Biden, the workers are seeing their wages decline in real terms, and the rich are seeing their assets explode in value. What's going on there? Well, help me figure out. Why would I vote Democrat?
I would argue that those trends were definitely already setting in when Trump was president. We have to remember he did two of the three stimulus checks. So I would say in that regard, I mean, I would say this is more just a general COVID problem that we have. I think that this would happen under any president. Now, I will say, Dane, I think that, you know, you're trying to do the gotchas. I'm more critical of Democrats than you think I am.
Okay. Probably. Okay. So. I'm being a jerk. Yeah. But like, this is what I don't get.
Zach was ready for you, Dane.
He was ready for
me. I was told to prepare.
What if I'm a voter, right? Mm-hmm. I'm in the Youngstown area.
Yes.
Why would I vote for the modern Democratic Party? Now, I have problems with the Republicans. So don't think I'm a you know, the Republicans can do no wrong, mm-hmm. right? But what do I get by voting? What do I get by even being center left? Like, what do I get?
I would argue that, and maybe we could touch on this later. I was going to say, like, it's really not the Democratic Party has moved to be more of like the suburban moderate party than the working class party. So I do understand why people in the Mahoning Valley would not like that. And then also, like, we've had Democrats forever, so people want something new. However, I don't see where the Republican Party is offering anything new, anything different to the working class people. They're kind of, you have like people like Josh Mandel and Donald Trump that try to put on I'm Mr. Working Class. I just don't see how, and then like, let's face it, and you're going to disagree. I still see the Republican Party as the party that favors the interest of the rich and the big business owners. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't see what exactly the Republicans are bringing to the table to help people who, you know, can't afford high cost drugs currently. And, you know, the healthcare system needs some type of reform, stuff like that. I mean, no, you're laughing, but what do you think is the solution to the extremely high pharmaceutical prices that,
well,
you just don't see that in other countries? You go to Canada and it's 10 times cheaper. What's your solution to that?
The nice thing about Joe Biden's America is that we don't have to worry about prescription drug prices because we're trying to, you know, elderly are trying to afford heating, right? Like on the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, heating. Okay. And then prescription drugs, which I agree, they should be lower.
But
like, the Democrats have inflated heating. So like, the solution is oh, we can't bring prescription drug prices down. We'll just make everything else go up. So, you know, you can't afford any.
Again, I really don't pin the inflation that we're seeing to Democratic policies. Are there some that might have had an impact? I'm sure there are. What I would say to that is, you know, you can't like act like you're concerned about elderly people having heating when the Republican Party is, I mean, time and time again, gone after any type of government assistance program, such as those that help people with heating. So, I mean, and elderly care, for example. I mean, that's my big problem with the Republican Party. It just seems like it's, you do it yourself, and that's not actually, you know, there's some good messaging in that, but it doesn't apply to everyone. It doesn't look at the situation with any type of nuance. So, I would say to you, what do you care, or what, you know, how do you provide heating to people that literally can't afford heating ever?
So I would say number one is you keep energy costs low by encouraging them. So here's how I would frame the Republican position. You keep the general economy strong so that people can work and provide themselves, and you keep prices low so that people can buy goods and services. Now, that's not going to cover everybody. There's always going to be people at the margin who can't afford basic goods and services, whether they can't work because of disability, whether they're children or the elderly. But as many working age people that can work should be working, right? I think that's a core platform. And the Republicans are not radical anarchists or libertarians. I think that's like a common misnomer. Like, let me give you an example. Would you rather be an elderly person in the state of Idaho or Utah? Or would you rather be an elderly person in New York, right? Would you rather be a middle-class family in the state of California or New York? Or would you rather be a middle-class family in the state of Florida or Indiana, right? So like this whole idea that like Republicans will, it'll be this like Charles Dickens, the elderly are going to be begging on the street and there's going to be like, you know, homeless orphans everywhere. If you go, that's not the case. That's just not the case. Like Republicans are not slashing welfare programs. And I think you talk to the average Republican and they would agree that there is a need for some sort of social provision of goods, but it should be one on the state level and two very limited in its aims, right? Here's my perspective. We've launched a war on poverty in the 1960s. We've massively increased social spending. Okay, every year it's gone up. It continues to go up in both real and nominal terms. And there's been nothing to show for it. Poverty hasn't gotten better, right? And if poverty has improved, it's because of the general improvement of the economy. I think the problem with today's society is not because people don't have enough money. Americans are even poor Americans are some of the wealthiest people on the planet. It's because of all these other social maladies. Like, here's another. I'll give you another example. If we switch gears to education, and then I'll pause. I don't want to filibuster this. You know, in the 1970s, you had test scores. You had Asians here, whites here, Hispanics here, blacks here. And we all agree that that's bad, right? We want everybody to do well. We don't want anybody to be in failing schools. So we've spent trillions and trillions of dollars in education. Per capita pupil spending's gone up. And it's 2021 and Asians are here, whites are here, Hispanics are here, and blacks are here. It hasn't moved the needle because maybe it's not about money, right? It's not about just spending more money or more programs. That's, I think, the fundamental Republican position. And Democrats just don't have an answer for that, right?
Okay, well,
Can
I jump in, Dane?
Yeah, go ahead.
I feel like this is Hannity and Combs from back in the day.
So one thing you mentioned is that you say that Republicans are not cutting welfare programs, not touching them. I don't know where you're getting that from. President Trump's like had that proposal. I looked it up here. Would be it to cut the SNAP program, which is food stamps, by $180 billion. Now, I believe that didn't end up happening because Biden was president, but there were cuts to that when he was president. But my point is, why go after something like food stamps when you're also giving the rich tax cuts under the Trump presidency? And by the way, adding to the national debt, I mean, I'm young, but I'm old enough to remember when the Republicans cared about the national debt. I mean, it makes no sense. So you're cutting food assistance for poor people and you're giving tax cuts to the rich. I mean, how does that make sense, Dane? Like, one more thing I would say is that you have this attitude of like, with the poor people. Like, if you just give them money, that, or you think, like, you have to give them something to help the situation.
Sure.
If you just live perpetually in these neighborhoods, which we even see it in Youngstown, you go south of Midlothian Avenue, great neighborhood, north of Midlothian Avenue, you have a totally different life, worse schools, worse everything. Now, what is the solution to that? Probably diversifying our communities a bit more so we actually, you know, work together. But as it stands now, I mean, how am I supposed to succeed if I come from a family in a low-income neighborhood? We have very few, very little assistance from the government. There's no one helping out financially. I can't go to college because I can't afford it. I mean, how does that person succeed? Now, you could say, of course, many do. But most don't. So what's your solution to that?
Okay, first one. When we cut taxes, so I don't think that tax cuts are the most important pressing issue. I actually personally think the corporate rates could come up. I think marginal rates could come up modestly. And I think capital gains taxes could come up a little bit. But there comes a certain point where if people are working, right? A family making their money, they're seeing 40, 50% of their income when you add up property taxes, when you add up sales taxes, when you add up city, state, and federal income taxes, when it's a huge portion of what their labor and their time is going to the federal government, the state government, all the various institutions of government, and they're not getting very much in return. I'm not a radical libertarian. I think we need to pay taxes to maintain roads and bridges and schools, but we've gone above and beyond that. And moreover, if you look, right, here's the big macro picture, is that we have done what you said to do. We've gone way beyond the constitutional moorings of our government. We have dramatically increased spending on every single level of government. And I'm not talking in nominal terms. I'm talking in real terms. So even if you control for inflation, we're spending way more. And our society is worse off because to me, the problems can't necessarily be solved by a government program. You bring up the example of the communities in Youngstown, right? The issue there is not that they lack resources. Federal spending in poor areas can be higher than in other areas. Catholic schools, which you went to, have lower per pupil spending than the public schools do. So your parents obviously didn't believe, and I don't think you really believe at the end of the day that it's about money that translates to better results. What it's about is about the culture, about the family, right? If you grow up in a household where you don't have a father in the household, there's a high likelihood that there are going to be social maladies and you're going to perform well, right? There are studies that show that teenage girls, if they grow up in a household without a father, are more likely to be sexually active at a younger age. They're more likely to hit puberty at a younger age. Boys are violent, right? Government program giving people money is not going to fix that. And in many ways, it actually reverses that. So that's number one. There are cultural problems which the massive expansion of government has at best not helped, but at worst retarded and set back the development. So that's the conservative perspective. It's not like cut everything to the bone and let people starve, right? I don't have a problem with, you know, basic levels of Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, these various programs. Now we can debate the level of spending. But I think at the fundamental level, even if you go back to the colonial days where we had settlers in America, they had poor houses. So they had some social provisions. But the constant argument from the Democrats is, oh, there are poor people, give us more money. And I want to say one more thing, and I'm going to stop. You know who at the end of the day it benefits? Okay. It doesn't benefit the people in those neighborhoods. It fucks over the middle class family that's working to provide for their family because they see more of their paycheck gone. The random people in these neighborhoods might get a check at best. You know who it really benefits? The core constituency of the Democratic Party. Highly educated, college educated, social workers, government bureaucrats, NGO employees, upper middle class, white collar employees. Those are the guys that benefit. Some bureaucrat gets an $80,000 to $90,000, well, with inflation, $120,000 a year job and great benefits, okay? That's who benefits at the end of the day. I mean, come on,
I think it's quite funny. The core of the Democratic Party is, you're saying, the rich. I mean,
I think it, I don't you, think it, I think so. I think it's so, the very rich and the very poor. or the
okay. So I mean, I don't have the numbers on me right now. There's no way that the majority of rich people in this country, and we're talking millionaires and billionaires, are voting for the Democrats. There's no way. It's probably moving that way.
No.
Just let me keep going.
Okay. Okay. You're wrong.
First off, you bring up culture. Yes, you are right. But guess what? Culture and economics go hand in hand. You grow up in a very poor, crappy environment. Odds are your kids are going to also. Okay. So my question is, how are you going to just tell people, oh, get good family values, have a strong father in the house, when that's just an unrealistic thing to ask of people? No, I should rephrase that. It is a realistic and people should be doing it. However, if we're looking at the world from a realist perspective, that's not going to happen. You can sit there and yell at poor people and say, oh, just get money, get a job. But it doesn't solve the problem. And then also, you say that you're for, you know, raising the corporate tax or not cutting some taxes on rich people. Again, that's what have the Republicans done for the working class people? They've done that for the ultra wealthy people. And then also you say the middle class gets screwed over. Okay, then how about you vote for Joe Biden then, who's giving child tax credits to the middle class rather than giving big tax credits to the people at the top? So, I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. Republicans are on this thing right now where, you know, we're Mr. Working Class. Well, what do you have to show for that? You're still voting like Mitt Romney. You're still voting for like George Bush. I mean, I get it. The Democrats, they're annoying as hell. They're preachy. They're often out of touch with people in the Mahoning Valley.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, when you look at the goals that each party has, yeah, keep voting for the Republican Party and you get all these, you know, you can keep your high pharmaceutical costs. You can keep suffering to put your kid through college while saying, oh, at least I have marginally lower taxes. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. Okay. And then at the same time, the rich are over there benefiting by getting all the tax credits. So again, Dane, what has the Democratic or the Republican Party done for the working class? I want an example.
Yeah, I'll give you some. So under Trump, and this is, I think, the beauty of Trump is that he introduced this new pillar about trade, about how we need tariffs, how we need protectionism to protect American jobs. So you create an environment domestically where it's good to invest and to grow and to expand manufacturing. At the same time, you reinforce that with tariffs to protect American industries. Keep in mind, you know, it was Bill Clinton who signed NAFTA into law. We saw a massive exodus of jobs. I've heard every Democratic candidate talk about how they were going to repeal NAFTA. It was Donald Trump that did it. Keep in mind that we heard all about the abuses of Chinese trade. It was Donald Trump, with massive pushback from the Democrats, mind you, that put tariffs on Chinese steel, Chinese aluminum, and Chinese goods, which I'll give Biden credit for this, are still in effect today, although Biden is slowly unwielding Trump's tariff walls that he put up. So that's number one. Second of all, if you look at the results, real wages, so this is how much people are earning when they work, increase at some of the highest pace in the last 30 years under Donald Trump. So from 17, 18, and 19 prior to COVID, real wages were rapidly increasing. It was a good formula. So you ask, what did he do for working class people? He gave them an economy and an environment where prices for goods and services were low and what they were earning was going up. Under Biden, you know, I always hear promises from the Democrats. We had Barack Obama in power for 8 years. Did prescription drug prices go up or down? They went up. We have Democrats in power in California, in Illinois, in New York, in Maryland. Are these areas fruitful for the middle class? No, the middle class are fleeing New York. They're fleeing New Jersey. They're fleeing California.
California, I'll give you California, okay? I don't think I wouldn't want to live in California.
I lived in New York City. I lived in these areas. I lived in the state of Washington. And you look at the wealthiest counties. So, you know, somebody making $300,000-$400,000 a year, we like to think of as rich. The reality is they're upper middle class, right? The truly rich, if you look at San Francisco, Los Angeles, Manhattan, Washington, D.C. and the surrounding counties, Boston and the surrounding counties, Chicago, parts of the Chicago metropolitan area,
those areas where you have super high incomes and you have a highly college educated class, they vote solidly blue. The average Republican guy is a middle class family making like $80,000, $100,000 household income. So yeah, you know, they're doing well, but they're not rich by any standards. And the Democrats are like, oh, your prescription drug prices are going to come down. Right? Maybe theoretically, it hasn't happened. You've been talking about. I'm
shout out to Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin.
It hasn't. No, but it hasn't happened. It hasn't happened. Okay, Barack Obama. I remember this is what you guys always promised, Barack Obama. Your health care is going to go down $2,500, and it shot up. Okay, you always do this. You sell this. And you ask, like, oh, don't you people want the child tax credit? I don't want the child tax credit. I don't want you to take money out of my right pocket, right? And then give me a little bit back and be like, aren't I a great guy? No.
Okay, well, Dane, they're already doing that, except it's private corporations. What are you going to do when you send your kids off to college? You have to pay for it or get a loan. So it's the same thing, really. I would like to see – yes, it is. You're either paying higher taxes for there to be universal free college, for example, or you're hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, like trying to pay it to these private corporations. So at the end of the day, what is the difference?
So here's
I don't know exactly these specific numbers of how they stack up. That's my thinking.
This is what I don't understand about universal free college. Explain this to me. It's like cargo cult economics. Okay, it's like. There is a limited amount of human intellectual ability, right? It's distributed among the population. Some people are really smart, some people not so much. The idea that we send everybody to college is just madness because it's not college that makes people intelligent, right? 30, 40, 50 years ago, people that went to college were able to earn a premium. And we said, oh, that's college doing it. No, it's they were the smartest workers. Now that we sent everybody to college, we're sending the middle and marginal tier students, and they can't command the premiums, and we flooded the market. And the only people it's made wealthy are the college administrators, right? Okay, not even the professors. So your solution to this is, oh, wait. It's a broken system.
Before, you know, if you're poor, you know, just don't go to college, you know? Leaves the people. Okay, well, whatever. So I agree. College is not for everyone. No. You know, there people should go to trade school and stuff.
Yeah.
The problem is if you're broke and you're from a low income neighborhood in Youngstown, how are you paying for college? Okay. And yeah, there are great programs currently, I will say, but that doesn't cover all the costs. So, I mean, what are you supposed to do? You could be the next Albert Einstein living in the south side of Youngstown, and you look at the cost of college and say, oh, it's not worth it. I went to Cardinal Mooney, very diverse school.
It's not a very diverse school. Let's be honest about Cardinal Mooney.
It literally is, Dane. It's at least 30% non-white, which in the Mahoning Valley,
how many of
that
them were in their AP class? Were you in AP classes?
Okay, Dane, I meant economically diverse first off. So my point with this is I know several kids who lived in the city that had poor parents, okay, and very, you know, what you said, they didn't have the culture of going to pursue higher education. They couldn't afford college, so they never went. So, I mean, what I'm saying is, for all we know, those are the people that should be going to college, but they can't afford it.
So I think there's a good solution, and you raise a very good problem. If there are people of low economic means but high intellectual ability, we should, as a society, encourage these people to go to school. I absolutely agree with you, right? So the good news is, if we had a system that only prioritized the highly intelligent going to college and getting specialized training, at the same time creating good-paying jobs for everybody else, so it's not an elite society, they would have a better return on their education. And moreover, this is the beauty of things such as like the ACT test, the SAT test, and other merit-based scholarships and screening opportunities. So I find it very ironic that a center-left liberal is coming at me and speaking the virtues of, like, what do we do with these smart but poor kids when in the city of New York and in L.A. and in Northern Virginia, the Democratic Party and the liberals are trying to get rid of programs that prioritize kids that are poor but very smart. You want to shut those down for, quote unquote, equity and diversity reasons. So, same group that says that the ACT and the SAT are racist. Those are one of the greatest elements of egalitarianism in this country.
Okay, Dane, I don't know if you I mean, anyone that took the ACT or the SAT can, they realize it is not a great test. You just memorize what's on it. And if you memorize it, you can get a good grade. Or if you're really smart, I know smart people who did terrible the first couple times. It is not a great thing. When you say prioritize, like, you know, the higher intellectual kids to go to college, how do you do that? Like, I don't get what you, like, you advertise on TV. If you have an IQ of this or above, you go to college.
I think you have people that get good grades in school. Number one. So again, this isn't a perfect system. People that get good scores on those test scores, those test scores actually are highly correlated with not only college GPA results, but also postgraduate income. So, you know, there's this myth out there that, oh, it's just, you know, you're teaching to the test. And yeah, you know, on the margin, it does move your test score a little bit. But what we actually find is that a really strong correlation with SAT scores, ACT scores, LSAT scores, and performance in the academic environment and performance post-academic. So they're not even perfect, but they're a pretty strong correlation with intellectual potential.
I have one more comment.
You're shutting these down. I'm not shutting it down.
No, Dane, I will give you that because guess what? You're right. The people that are smarter, they do tend to get better grades on the ACT and stuff. That is correct, but that doesn't apply to everyone, Dane. Okay.
No, anyway. It doesn't.
So your smart theory here. So let's look at Youngstown City Schools.
Yeah, let's look.
Great place. Anyways, so you're a kid that grows up in the Youngstown City School District. What they are teaching is nowhere near on par what you should be learning. So there are plenty of kids in there, for example, that might be smart as heck if they went to another school. But because they're in that school and they have worse classes, worse teachers, worse whatever, how are they supposed to succeed? So that's one of the things.
That's a great point.
But just to circle that in, they do have school vouchers available to them.
Why can't they? Why don't we take the students and bring them to Mooney? Why don't we expand the voucher system?
Okay.
So some schools are failing. Youngstown City Schools
are
failing.
Let's bring them to Mooney and Ursuline into some Catholic schools.
Let's give them vouchers. Let's empower parents.
Yeah.
And if they have gifted kids, they can move that out. But the Democrats have opposed that. You are correct on that.
However, that is a band-aid on the problem. You're not solving the problem. You're saying, let's just take these kids there and leave the rest in the dust to get a completely inferior education, because I don't think anyone here would argue that. And also, you know, you can't just say, get a better culture. I mean, if that was the case, you know, I'm going to go run for Youngstown School Board. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, you're right. It's not simple. There are no simple fixes.
And this is the thing. What is the solution to dealing with, like, poverty that keeps happening in a cycle in this country in these certain neighborhoods?
Sure.
It is a mixture of reinvestment and culture. Now, some things, like, for example, a lot of people complain about, like, gentrification. I'm not one of those people. I think that's great. You're essentially bringing jobs and investment back into the neighborhood. You're making it more diverse so people actually, like, work together. And you don't – I mean, it's
– Yeah,
so
it's great.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, I don't quite, whatever.
I'll just put it this way, right?
Yes.
I think simplistic answers and simplistic solutions do not work. Nobody's going to say that we've got this silver bullet, right? And I do think that, you know, the answer is probably somewhere between a mixture of reforming culture and also improving economic opportunities. So I don't disagree with you there. I think, though, the perspective that I have, and I think conservatives have, is, you know, Christ said, the poor you will have with us always. We're never going to solve all the problems. But the fundamental viewpoint of conservatism is that at first we do no harm, and second, we make incremental changes to make things better. And I think that the problem with liberalism as constructed currently is you guys are trying to revamp and rebuild society. And you have this utopian view of the world. And every time it fails, instead of critically reexamining the policies that you guys have implemented, you always blame conservatives. The reality is, in the urban environments in America, Democrats have had complete monopolies of control of Chicago, Philadelphia, D.C., Los Angeles, San Francisco for decades. Okay, maybe the only big metro area where you haven't had that is New York, because they've had some Republican mayors. And yet you have all these problems, right? So the Democrats, since, you know, the 50s, have been, give us more power, we'll fix this. We'll lower your prescription drug prices. We'll fix your schools, right? All these ambitious promises, and you've been given power, and that hasn't come true. I'm not coming up here and saying I'm going to fix every problem. I'm going to say you guys have failed. You failed. You've had power. I've given you the pen, and you've totally failed.
I don't disagree with this. The Democrats are not good either. This is why I don't like the two-party system. You get a situation where both parties, you know, they just do their own interests for whoever is running the party in whatever place. And that's what happens in places like Baltimore or any of the other cities you mentioned.
Baltimore. I didn't even mention Baltimore, but you're right. Yeah, Baltimore.
Well, that's a pretty good example.
Give him another one.
So, yeah, thanks.
Okay, so you mentioned like, you mentioned Jesus's quote on, what did you say?
The poor you will have with you always.
Okay. Well, Dane, I mean, I don't know if you read the Bible. I went to Catholic school, or you did too.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the same guy that said, and I quote, "It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God."
Agreed.
And there are several stories where he says, "You must give up your wealth to follow me." Now, am I one of those people that say, "Oh, Jesus is a socialist"? No, that's ridiculous. However, I know damn well Jesus would not be a Republican, and if he came back today preaching the same exact message, people like you would be like, "Oh, who's this random like socialist hippie?" Like,
I don't think Jesus would be a Republican.
He'd be stopped at the border.
Well, no, if he weren't a citizen, he probably would. No, I don't like the idea of, you know, Christ would perfectly agree. Like, we're 2021; it's a microcosm of the grand scale of human civilization. You know, God is not a perfect fit for all this. My point was less to bring God into politics. My point was more that poverty is an intractable problem, right? So my appreciation for the left wing, and I've read a lot of left wing works, is a concern for the problems of society. I like that. I admire that. I think you guys were right 20 years ago about the disasters of free trade. I think you guys were right about the Iraq war being a disaster, the Afghan war being a disaster, even though most of the Democrats voted for both of those. And I think that you guys, you're not completely off base, but what I find lacking in the left wing is the lack of a critical re-examining. And moreover, recently, I think you guys have even dropped that, and you've just gone off the fucking rails, right? Where you're like, if somebody gets their dick cut off, they're now a woman, and you could get fired for saying the emperor has no clothes, right?
And I have a comment on this, Dane.
Yeah.
So this is the thing about the Republican Party. They say, you know, they'll pick these social issues. And I'll admit, the Democrats, if for many people like Youngstown voters, have gone way too woke for them, okay?
Yeah.
So then what the Republicans do is they say, oh, see, you, we understand we can get you on these social issues because people like you, they would rather care about like some random person, as you said, chopping their dick off and calling them a woman or whatever. How does that affect you, Dane? It doesn't affect you.
Let me tell
you. Who cares? This is a country of freedom, Dane. We should have the freedom to do this. And by the way, yeah, sure. What? The Republicans, oh, they banned trans people in the bathrooms. Great. We have to like, what? We have to like show like identification cards or like have someone check at the entrance? How do you even enforce that, first off? Secondly, I mean, it's just, who cares, Dane? I mean, there are so many bigger issues that affect people. And no, someone put in the comments, it affects their kids. It does not affect your kids. No, it does not. I want to hear how some people using the same bathroom affects your kids. So you're telling me that trans people, oh, I'm trans, so I'm now a predator? Like, what? Like, there are plenty of goddamn predators that are men or women. So what's the difference?
Well, they're mostly men, right?
There's no evidence.
So this is one of the things the Democrats do. You guys constantly push left on the culture.
Yes.
Okay. And then when Republicans or even people in the middle speak out and they're like, hey, this is crazy, you're like, why are you concerned about cultural issues? And then you push a little bit more. Whoa, guys, this is nuts. Why are you so concerned? Don't you want to get the rich guy down the street? Actually, most people are, you know, most Republicans, it's not that they worship the rich, it's that they don't have a problem because they know that they're hard workers and they're producing. I think the average Republican probably doesn't like a Jeff Bezos or a Bill Gates, the billionaires, but like a guy that has 20, 30 million in the bank, who cares? Good luck. God bless you. Okay. So this is what the Democrats do. They'll push the culture issue. Republicans will react. Why are you talking about culture? And, oh, but it doesn't affect you. If that were true, I would be fine with that. You know, I don't care what people do. If they want to have orgies in San Francisco and defecate on the street, you know, whatever. But well, the reality is,
that would not be the same thing. That would be hurting the people.
Oh, that's no, no. City. That's what's happening in San Francisco. There's litter, mass defecation on the street. Okay. Yeah, it's not good.
It's not
they
call
that and it's been normalized. There are homeless cities throughout California. I was just there last week. But the problem is, society is an organic web. Okay. And what individuals do affects other individuals. The idea that we can just say, do whatever you want, you know, do what thou will. That should be the law of the land. And it's not going to affect you. That's not true. And moreover, it does affect freedom is not unlimited. There are rights and there are duties. Okay. You should read the founding fathers. They did not envision a society of unlimited liberty. They envisioned a society of very strict personal morality, complemented by a very loose government structure. Okay. That's what they, that's you read them, read the Federalist Papers, read, go read speeches throughout history. And the reality is on these culture war issues, they do affect me. They do affect me. I have two small children. I'm a white male. My wife is a white female. I have two white children. Okay. And now in the public schools, even in Ohio,
it's CRT time, everyone. Let's hear Dane's definition of CRT.
Being taught that they are racist, that they have
privilege, that
they were founded on a racist country, that everything about America is racist, that we need equity, which is a direct assault to equality under the law. So, yeah, it does affect me because it affects what type of society I live in.
Dane. Okay, so first off, then I'll get to CRT because, goddamn, I joked to my friends
about us
leaving. But anyways, so you say freedoms are limited, right? When it comes to stuff like this,
I say
how would you react? And I don't believe this, but how would you react if I said, "Oh, we're just going to ban AR-15s because your freedom is limited"?
There are rights and duties. Yeah.
Okay, but
no freedom is unlimited.
Okay, but whatever. Moving on to CRT.
CRT is
not a thing that's happening. Sure, I'm sure that you have a couple insane teachers in isolated scenarios that have done it, but there is no evidence of this happening widespread. And you ask people their definition of what is critical race theory, it's like, oh, we taught our kids that there was segregation and that the white people at the time, you know, were the ones behind it. That is not anti-white people. I am a white guy, okay? I am in very progressive circles. I have never once been made to feel guilty for my race, and I never would because that's ridiculous. Why would I feel guilty for what our ancestors did? Who cares? That was them 200 years ago, not me. So this is ridiculous, Dane. You hear people tell you, oh, this, you know, slavery happened and it was white people that did it, which is an objective truth. And you just go, oh, my God, they're blaming me. They're not blaming you, Dane. And then furthermore, it's just it's critical race theory. It's not happening, okay? We're teaching kids history. I mean, this is like an assault on history. I mean, I don't get I have a radical belief here that we should be teaching unbiased history, okay? And whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans influencing that history, it is not good. So, again, what is your definition of critical race theory?
Sure. Critical race theory is an ideology built upon the idea, an ideology in teachings built upon the idea that there is an inherently privileged group in American society, that privileged group are whites, and moreover, that they are structural oppressors and that they gain their power and influence by oppressing others who are namely black, but also brown and other minorities. So that is critical race theory. And moreover, it seeks to say, it argues that the foundations of American society and the institutions of American society are structurally racist, that they empower white people at the detriment of black people, brown people, and other people, and that they cannot be changed. So that is the idea. It's an ideology. Yes. And I do believe it's being taught. So this is the thing, right? It's not, you know, there's this weird dichotomy with the left where they're like, oh no, we're not teaching critical race theory, but if we did, it wouldn't be so bad. It's just, you know, it's not about, I don't think people are reacting.
I'll disagree with that. They taught critical race theory in middle school and elementary school. That would be bad. Okay. Because it's something that they should teach. If they're going to teach it, it should be kept as a college level thing. Okay. But they're not actually teaching that now. As I said, I'm sure there's a couple crazy people that did.
They totally are. There was the Ohio Board of Education passed Resolution 20, which in that resolution, it was later repealed, but this was passed in 2020, which argued for equity, which is this new buzzword that's emerged overnight, not equality, but equity. That argued for that Ohio and the education system was institutionally racist, and that the goal of the education system was to build equity and to encourage equity, right? In diversity, inclusion, and all these buzzwords. So they use different synonyms in that, but it all goes back to the critical race theory. And you can't tell me the universities have been teaching this since like the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. The teachers are raised on this stuff. And now it's entering into the classroom. White privilege was a phrase that was completely alien to the American public 15 years ago. Now high schoolers, middle schoolers, grade schoolers are learning it. And there are hundreds of stories, right? So it is being taught. You can't just say, well, it's not being taught. No, it absolutely is being taught. The parents have the receipts. They have the books. They have the lesson plans.
Okay. So first off, most of these, when you say the receipts, they're ridiculous. And it's just like, okay, you say synonyms, but teaching equity in school is not the same as like telling someone that being white is evil. Okay, so in that regard, that is not the same. Okay, secondly, I'm at a liberal public college. I have not been taught about white privilege yet. I kind of want my money back. You know, I thought I'd be taught about all this stuff, but I haven't been. Unfortunately, I guess I'm not evil enough.
And what's your major?
You'll love this, Dane.
Economics, Dane.
Oh, economics. Oh,
that's right up his alley.
Yeah.
Anyway,
he's Ron Verbs, economist that calls him
really?
On the show.
Well, look at that. Okay. The critical race theory, it's just, my gosh. I mean, I just don't even know where to start this. You say white people, they teach white people inherently racist. I just don't believe they teach that. To say America was founded with racism as a component? That's objectively true, Dane. I mean, slavery existed. That helped build the country.
Yeah,
does that make
true.
America
yeah.
bad? Heck no, America's great.
Yeah,
so why can't we talk about bad things that happened in our past? Why do we want to erase history?
I don't have a problem talking about slavery.
Okay,
but
then like
I want to interject,
that's the thing. You have these people like, you know, going to their school board meetings, like throwing a fit, and like you look into what's actually happening. And it's such mundane stuff like,
slavery happened,
segregation happened. Okay,
no,
then,
it's not that. I don't think people
at
are
At least
mad
here in the Mahoning Valley, I have not seen any compelling evidence that there has been
maybe
any type
your world's
of insane.
A little limited. It's there's, you know, maybe you were
I think yours is a little bit limited too, Dane. I don't know.
maybe. But I'm just saying, I don't know. I think
that's generally the problem with America, that we've gotten to the point where you know, I'm sure there's some intentional forces behind this, but we've gotten divided so much to the point where what I say sounds freaking crazy to you. What you say sounds absolutely insane to me as well. So, I mean, it's like we're speaking two different
things.
No, but in terms of like social issues. So I'm saying it's gotten to the point we're divided over social issues to the point where both sides see each other as insane and just like completely not even able to listen to them. And you said earlier that it's the Democrats that are always initiating it. I mean,
yeah.
I disagree. It's with something like CRT, that was completely on the Republicans initiating that. And then I would also say, you know, it's both sides keep pushing and pushing. And a lot of it's not the Democratic Party doing it. It's like random private corporations. Like, I don't know if you remember like the stupid, like non-binary Mr. Potato Head controversy that happened earlier.
Yeah,
that's the thing. These issues, they come and go so quick. It's like, that's not the Democratic Party running on a platform of like, you know, we're going to make Mr. Potato Head trans. That was like a corporation who has the right to do that for whatever reason, if they think that works well in the free market. I mean,
yeah, it's not necessarily the Democratic Party.
And then I'm just saying both sides like go back and forth over these dumb issues like that. And I'm like, who cares about trans Mr. Potato Head or any of these critical race theory problems when there's actual problems affecting people? That's my
opinion. I do, because to be fair, it's not just the Democratic Party. The left wing has a monopoly on culture, whether it's academia, the media, the government, you know, not completely the government, but the media, academia, large corporations, they all flow to the direction of the left wing, right? And the left wing is able to shape opinion. They're able to shape the Overton window, and they're able to shape the parameters of the debate. And they're able to take an idea that was very outre, like transgenderism, and make it normalized. Whereas big companies are now celebrating trans people. And we have to look at somebody like Admiral Levine, right, and say that that's a woman when it's quite clearly a man, right? And you're like, well, it doesn't affect you. No, it does affect me because, you know, it's 2 + 2 = 4. And I don't want to call something that is not that it is, right? And I don't want to say that something is, if something is black, I don't want to say that it's white. Truth matters. And moreover, it goes back to, and the critical race theory, which I think you just admitted, that's being taught in the universities. And I think you'd be naive to say it's being taught in the universities. And it's only going there and no further. Right?
And when I say university, I want to clarify, it's like a literal graduate program thing they teach you, okay? I've taken
plenty of the introductory courses.
I am a third year in college. I've never been taught that I'm evil or any critical race theory thing. And in fact, I don't even have to take those classes. The only class I've had to take that would even brush up on that type of thing is sociology, and I wasn't even taught that in sociology of all classes, and that's the most liberal class there is. Unless you go to college to like do like, you know, a studies major, then you're not going to encounter any of this critical race theory in college even.
It's pervasive. I don't necessarily take it. It's definitely there. Okay. But here's why stuff like this matters. Stuff like this matters because colleges formulate the elite of society. And the elite of society sets the course for culture and they set the course for the law. And now the elite of American society hates the institutions that we've built. They fundamentally condemn it as a racist, bad country. Okay, this isn't just a democratic problem. I wish it were. It would be easy to beat at the ballot box, but it's not. It's a cultural problem. And moreover, and this is what's really concerning, is they have propagated an ideology of equity, right, which seeks to undermine the basic principle of not only of America, but of Western civilization, of equality under the law. Now, we haven't lived up to that ideal. It's definitely an ideal. But now we're completely moving away from it, where we're saying that if you have black skin, you should be given more so that you can achieve the same outcome. It's this very weird, the left wing, this is what I don't get. Maybe you can explain this. The left wing celebrates multiculturalism and celebrates diversity. We're all different. We all have these different cultures. And then when these different cultures produce different outcomes on a societal level, whether it's education levels or welcome or wealthy or income or anything like that, then it's all, no, we have to be equal. We have to be equity. We have to completely, you know, level everybody out. So which is it? Do we celebrate cultural diversity with all the, you know, results that brings, or do we have to level anybody? Like Harrison,
I'll let Zach have the last word here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Who does it help to have like an underclass? I just don't get it. Shouldn't equity be something we strive for? If you have equity, you said college creates the next elites of society. Great, we have a more diverse group of elites that will bring money back into their communities. That will bring them up, and then we won't have to have this conversation every year complaining about what to do with the poors. Like, it's ridiculous. I just don't understand. You say, like, people are – the Democratic Party is, like, condemning America as, like, a racist institution and blah, blah, blah. This is a very fringe group of people that believe this, but people have you believe it's, like, everyone. I don't see, like, Joe Biden going up there saying America is a racist country. People seem to think people on the left hate America. That's not the case. I don't know why that's how it's said, and we certainly don't teach people to hate America. People on the right seem to think that anything we teach to make America better is seen as something terrible. And then lastly, you said equity is not a Western value. I mean, look at Canada, look at Germany, look at France, look at England. I mean, what's your definition of Western here? It doesn't make sense. Those are all
France has explicitly come out against it.
I don't mean racial diversity. I'm saying equity when it comes to income inequality and such. Okay. They have much stronger social programs than we do. So
yes,
equity is nothing new in Western values.
No. In France and your Western European countries built their welfare states on the principle of egalitarianism and social subsidiary. They didn't build it on equity. Equity is something very different from an egalitarianism, right, where you give everybody equal resources. Equity explicitly says you don't give everybody equal resources because people have different starting points. You give them unequal resources. So no, equity was not foundational to the Western European welfare states, or it's a radically new concept that emerged over the last 15, 20 years. And it's a very American concept. I studied in Europe. You don't see these concepts in the UK or France or Germany, definitely not Germany. So anyways, you had the last word. I'm sorry, Michael.
we didn't get a chance to talk about the changing political landscape, but nonetheless, I sat back and enjoyed a nice, robust discussion, a debate between Zach and Dane. You each held your own. So appreciate both. Zach, excellent work with the maps and everything. And thank you so much thank for you. Coming on. And I know you were probably anticipating, nor was I, the debate that ended up happening, but you held your own. So I appreciate you.
I was preparing for the possibility of Dane showing up.
I think this was great. I think this was a lot. Zach, you're a good guy. All in good spirit.
I think you would be nice to. I think you're a good guy too. And like, to be fair, like, one of the nicest people that I've ever been friends with is a Republican. So, you know, I don't hate Republicans.
No.
You know? I could just argue with you guys forever. So
it's actually fun. This is all good. It's all good fun. Thank you, Michael. Sorry.
Back in the day, there was Hannity and Combs, and you know they used to duke it out. But I remember Dane. I don't know if you remember, because Zach, you're too young. I'm dating myself here. Crossfire on CNN. You had Paul Begala and James Carville on the left, and then Tucker Carlson and I think Bob Novak on the right. And they'd have a show on CNN every I think like at 5 o'clock every day on CNN, Zach. And they would just duke it out on political things, but they had representation, and you don't really see that too much anymore. So it's kind of good to kind of hear you guys both duke it out. But nonetheless, again, thank you, Zach, for coming on and being our first liberal guest. And by all means, I'll be interested to see how the maps ultimately shake out in Ohio. Because obviously I have my feelings as to how the Mahoning Valley should be drawn, but we'll see how it all shakes out. But again, really appreciate you coming on. Keep up the great work with the maps. We'll definitely be in touch, and I like a lot of what you do. So I'll definitely be promoting a lot of what you're doing, and good luck with your studies. And Dane, do you have any final thoughts here before we let
you go? No, I'm sorry. I crashed.
Well, you got to give your sponsor of the day in here.
Oh, my sponsor of the day is Kit Kat, because no matter if you're on the left of the Kit Kat bar or the right of the Kit Kat bar, you're still part of the bar. And I think as Americans, we'd be well served. So Kit Kat, sponsoring today's episode. It's healthy, it's nutritious, and most importantly, it's delicious. Thank you, Michael. I'm out.
Zach, any last words from you?
It was interesting to have Dane. He's gone. Okay. It went well. You're a great host. it went off the rails there a bit, but in a good way. I think it went better than I expected. So, and we had our time to talk like calmly. So that was great. We had a little bit of both.
Yep. Yep. So, nonetheless, we'll have to see down the road, try to get you on. And, it doesn't necessarily have to be a debate. We'll have something more structured,
right.
But wasn't expected Dane to hop on there.
It was fun though.
So anyways, thanks everybody for tuning in, especially those who are listening on the podcast, which might be a more complicated one to listen to, being that we had visuals up throughout the show going over maps and all that. But, just so everybody knows, we're hopefully going to interview one of the U.S. Senate candidates on the Republican side next week. I don't think we're going to do it live, though. We're probably going to record it and then show it in a future episode. So things are happening there. And we'll make sure we ask about Tim Ryan, Zach, on all the people the candidates we're able to talk with. So nonetheless, again, thank you so much for coming on, and hope everybody takes care. See
you,
everyone. Thank you.